Diego Sun for a job paying $18 a week. Harold, who had had a year's start on me, was already making 25. And as I often twitted him, when on occasion being his interviewee in many years later, I never caught up with him. The San Diego Sun was not what it was, a Scripps Howard paper, and any of you that know anything about the newspaper business know that the Scripps Howard syndicate was always the operator of second and third newspapers wherever they operated. They got along with staffs about half of the size of the opposition papers, and even though this was a time when so-called PM newspapers, afternoon papers, were still the leading circulation builders and money makers in newspaperdom, which fell a position which was abandoned to morning newspapers when television came in to take up people's evening time. The San Diego Sun got by with about as little in the way of investment or expenditure as could be imagined. For one thing, they were quite paternalistic. They paid us on Mondays rather than on Fridays so that we wouldn't go and blow the whole thing on the weekend. The office boys, the copy boys, referred to their paychecks as Christopher Columbus checks, because after 8 cents had been taken out for a new program called Social Security, the amount came to $14.92. One photographer on the newspaper, a stone-deaf fellow named Earl Zahm, who had one limitation imposed upon him. No matter what the importance of the story, he was not to use more than 2 flash bulbs. Flash bulbs cost about 6 cents each, and they were an expenditure. Earl was once called out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning to cover a big department store fire downtown, the old...
Marston.
No, it wasn't Marston. It was south of Broadway. Walkers?
Walker's Dive.
No. Well, Whitney's. You find as you get older. And he quickly used up his 2 flash bulbs before the fire really flared. So poor Earl climbed 7 flights up the fire escape across the street, on a building across the street, and waited and took a time frame exposure utilizing the exploding flash bulbs of the Union and Tribune photographers. Got a picture that was carried nationwide as a prize winner. The story is probably apocryphal, but told nonetheless of the hard-bitten managing editor of the Sun, J. Boyd Stevens, who's still with us in Rancho Bernardo, even older than some of us, that a reporter once was given 3 days to take his bride to Yosemite on a honeymoon. And middle of the third day, he wired back to the office and said, "It's wonderful here. Can I stay an extra day?" And the reply came back from J. Boyd Stevens, "What you're doing is wonderful anywhere." Many of us on that staff, if you had to get along on 18 or even the munificent sum of $25, which Harold was making, it was just as well to watch your expenditures. And we lived in a rooming house run by an elderly couple about 10 minutes from downtown, Mom and Pop Hare. Mom was the real dynamo. She ran the place, and for $8 a week, you got a room and 3 meals. She put up a lunch for you to take to work. If you didn't want to carry lunch to work, you could have the whole deal for $7. But, five lunches for the week for the extra buck was not too shabby. Pop Hare, I regret to say, had to be watched rather closely, because if you kept any booze in a dresser drawer, you'd find it after a few days watered down. Had the idea that while you were there at work in the daytime, Pop was making the rounds checking the supplies. Harold Keene was you know, we all had to be fairly fast when you were outnumbered as we were by the opposition, but Harold was simply an amazing sight to behold. And afterwards, after the San Diego Sun had been bought out by a certain chain operation, which shall be nameless, otherwise known as the Copley Press, he went over to the Tribune, and when they acquired Harold, they really got something. It was said on the Trib that Harold could turn out a lead for the Tribune, and one for the Los Angeles Times, and one for the Associated Press, all of which he represented, as well as having his job on the Tribune, while a normal man was just working out his story for the paper. And after 39 years as a San Diego correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, Harold was flattered to see them start a San Diego edition, and to note that to replace Harold, they hired a staff of 30. The late afternoons were no relaxing time for Harold, because at 5 o'clock or 5:15 or 5:30, whenever it was, he had a 15-minute news program on KFSD, the old AM radio station whose studios were then atop the Grand Hotel. And while other members of the staff were beginning to shake off the effects of the day's work, Harold was assembled. If you've never assembled a 15-minute newscast, believe me, that's a lot of airtime to fill. And yet Harold carried it all off as if it were just flowing from more than the carbon copies of the day's news that he was working off from the Tribune. And in that day, radio news was even less sophisticated than today, and Harold was probably the first radio reporter who did more than just read what has already appeared in the newspaper. He was a man who followed up stories, and you knew when you heard Harold on the air that you were having access to the very latest on whatever it was he was giving you. When television came, 1948. We were a little behind the East Coast in getting it, but San Diego had its first station early on with Channel 8, KFMB-TV, and the management, of course, there was nothing in television at that point that in any way matched. This was even before the stentorian network news shows with Cameron, Swayze, and the like. It was totally in its infancy, but the management of that news station had the wit to see that in this very good reporter, there was the makings of a nightly news program, which wasn't a news program at all, but it's called People in the News. And it was a 15-minute interview program in which Harold Keene came on, and he would introduce whoever happened to be in the news, and it was a conversation piece around town who had been on the night before. And pretty soon he became a very powerful figure in his ability to get people to come on. And some might have been nervous, but they were more nervous about not coming on than having somebody like Harold Keene wondering why and trying to find out why they didn't want to come on. This was a time when television was still in, news at least, and anything like an interview program was still categorized as public service, to fulfill the requirement that was supposedly imposed upon licensees to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity, not just to make money. It was many years later that management discovered that good local news was also an excellent money maker and could produce a lot more revenue than the small share of the take that they got off a network advertising. The Tribune, however, began to be a little disturbed by this use of its reporter. This was before the newspapers in general were accepting television, as they had earlier on been reluctant to accept radio, because you see, it competed with the newspapers for advertising. And so the time came when Harold, early in the 1950s, when Harold got his ultimatum. Either he was going to have to go with this new competitor television, or he was going to have to decide that he was, after all, a newspaper man and stay with the Tribune. He could not do both. And to the amazement of the newspaper management, Harold had the vision to see that there might be a future even greater in television than in the print media. And he went with KFMD, both in radio and on TV. And I should say that today, for a while, you might have supposed that the most celebrated newsman ever to come out of San Diego was a fellow named Max Miller, who had been a waterfront reporter on the Old Sun and who wrote 10 novels beginning with I Cover the Waterfront, which, of course, song and movie and all, made him rich, and he was able to take up residence in La Jolla. And which I assure you, I can't think of any other San Diego Sun veteran who ever had lived in La Jolla, including those present. And this is because he was so identified with all the big news stories that this burgeoning city encountered. One of my favorite recollections is of a fellow who ran across the western United States in about 1952 or 3, killing, robbing, pillaging, raping as he went. He was called Bad Boy Bill Cook. And he'd claimed 7 or 8 or 9 lives. He'd come up to campers in their recreational vehicles and kill them and take whatever they had and move on. Finally, he was the object of such a chase that he crossed into Mexico, and the FBI in San Diego put out the word that they were tailing him and they were on to this and they would produce him very quickly. And turned out that a couple of Mexican rural police encountered Bad Boy Bill Cook and took him captive and brought him up to Tijuana. And the cameras went down to Tijuana, and there was this huge press conference where Harold had not missed the opportunity to give it to the FBI a little bit for their pomposity and their failure. And he was interviewing Bad Boy Bill Cook, who sat there with his head down on his chest. He wouldn't look up, and this just wasn't going to be a good television picture at all. So Harold leads him. Here's this man who's killed nearly a dozen people in this rampage that's had the attention of the whole country these last weeks. And he reaches over and lifts his chin up, looking right into the camera. Harold showed similar daring every Tuesday night. This was in the days when broadcasters didn't manage mind shamelessly boosting commercial enterprises, and every Tuesday night was pro wrestling night in San Diego. And pro wrestling was, I regret to tell you, way back then was just what it is today. Every Tuesday night, a feature of Harold's People in the News program on Channel 8 was an interview with whoever was the hottest wrestler of the moment was going to be on the card that night. And Harold's modus was to tell the wrestler he wanted to put on what his favorite hold was. Well, poor Harold, week after week, he'd submit himself to headlocks, to airplane spins. And the most ludicrous of all came the night they were featuring some midget wrestlers. About 3 feet tall. And these fellas didn't understand they were supposed to hold back, you know. That. And poor Harold, he took a horrible beating. More serious side, Harold was the best, well, I'd say one of the two or three best interviewers I have ever known. If you have noticed anything about TV interviewers, most of them, especially these pretty ones, and I refer to both sexes, the trouble with an interview that you hear is that the interviewer is so busy thinking of what he's going to ask next that he isn't listening at all to what the interviewee is saying in response to his previous question. You can just see them sitting there looking at their notes and the person is talking. And you always have the feeling that with one of these types of interviews, that you could say, and why did you come to San Diego? And the answer could be, well, because I was up for matricide in Oklahoma. Pillaging and raping. And the interviewer would come up, and where do you plan to live? Harold was not that kind of interviewer. He was the kind who just wouldn't let you off the hook. His gambit was to say, now here's what we're going to talk about in this interview. And of course, I got to understand that after this, after I was in Congress, I knew the guy well enough to know, look out, this is not what he's going to talk about at all. You have this little preparation of interviewing you, and he'd tell you about what questions you were going to come to. And I came to my district 5 nights before the 1964 election with Lyndon Johnson. And this was at the climax of a campaign that Johnson was supposed to be winning in a walk, except that two or three nights before, in the local YMCA near the White House, a highly placed member of the Johnson Brain Trust had been caught in a compromising situation with a homosexual ring. And there was great concern within the ranks of the campaign that this might, you know, you can't tell how the public is going to react to something like this, and it might be very damaging. It didn't look as if it should be. This was my first re-election campaign, and I, of course, was worried as I hadn't eaten in 5 days. And as Johnson came off the plane and I was trying to maneuver him toward the speaker's platform out at Lindbergh Field, there was Harold waiting with his camera and his microphone. And naturally, I thought best to keep the president moving if possible. He was enough of a ham, though, that when he saw that microphone and that camera, he stopped. And Harold's first question out of the box was, Mr. President, do you think that the homosexual incident involving your administration is going to prove damaging in the campaign? Well, I thought, now I've really got to push the guy. But not a chance. He stopped and he talked and he gave an interview which became national headlines 5 days before the election. President charges that Eisenhower administration had similar homosexual... I don't know whether it was true or not, but I didn't care. I didn't care. So this guy will kill you if you stay here any longer. So I literally tugged the president onto the platform. And it may not have escaped your attention that he was reelected despite his brief stopover with Harold King. I can tell you that the end of Harold's career, the last two or three years, were, in my opinion, the best of all. I recall Harold saying to me one time, quite seriously, you know, Van, as hard as we work and as all the effort, imagination we put into this, hardly anything that we ever write will live beyond sundown. And of course he was right. That's the essence of a daily newspaper. You live for the moment and the next day is a new challenge, a new time. That was before Harold went to work on a regular, not that he was employed by, but he had a monthly column, I would call it, but it was a feature piece in San Diego Magazine. In that medium, for the first time, Harold went out on a long-range business of investigation and preparation of a story that wound up with some of the most informative reporting that's been done, the best writing, and on subjects like San Diego's water needs, its transportation, and other matters. Some of his works in San Diego Magazine are still a touchstone for people who are supposed to be in charge of the municipal agenda. And you know, this is not a bad epitaph at all, to be simply the very best at whatever it is that you do. Harold Keene was the best. And the friends that he left nearly 10 years ago will have to be delighted to know that his memory is to be associated with this new center for international students here on the campus of San Diego State University. Although he was not privileged to have been a graduate of this institution, where his wife achieved both a BA and an MA, they're putting herself one up on Harold. Harold and San Diego State had a great deal in common. A spirit of intellectual curiosity, an inclination to reach out to all who share that curiosity, and an understanding that for most of us, success will come only after hard work. Harold would be especially pleased to know that his bond with this university is to be perpetuated through an international student center. Himself a second-generation American, as are, I guess, most of us, this man was close enough to his roots to know some of the difficulties encountered by strangers in any land. Yes, even in a land which offers them as much as ours does. Thanks to all of you, and today especially thanks to dear Ruth Keene, foreign students at San Diego State will enjoy new opportunities to mingle and to intermingle. As set forth on the invitation to this morning's event, you have joined an effort to build a new foundation for peace, an effort whose importance has surely been impressed upon us by events of the last 6 weeks, 10,000 miles from here. Whatever a student's race, whatever his national origin, or as enunciated in the 15th Amendment, whatever his previous condition of servitude, all will find a friendly haven in this great campus center. Here, let us hope they will find the spirit of America. It will be a spirit that asks, how are things going? Anything you need? Or how can we help? It will be the spirit of Harold Keene.
Days like this, where we hear stories of inept and dishonest politicians, where's Lionel Van Dierlin when we need him? Thank you very, very much. All of you, we would appreciate if you would come up, have some more coffee. Things have been refilled. There'll be more food brought out. Please stick around. A couple of reasons. Number one, we don't want to leave a lot of food that has to be disposed of. Number two, there's going to be some photo sessions. And Judy Cicello, who's been the guiding force of today's event, the San Diego State University and the Student Center, Student Resource Center, is going to be arranging photo things. So please stick around because you'll likely be tapped to be involved in something. You can't escape. She won't let you out the door. And to close out the program portion of today's event, I'd like to do something a little bit different. And as Lionel Van Dierlin said, we're having a groundbreaking ceremony within a room, and that's a little bit different. And consistent with the theme brought up, I think, by Ron, of Disney's Small World, or possibly it was President Day, if you would all join hands with your neighbor, seriously. This being a small world, and if the students would do the same thing, we'd like to introduce Linda West, who's going to grace us with some beautiful music. And in closing today, too, if any of you have some friends who you feel would like to become involved in a project as exciting as this project is, please have them call us. Please have them talk to one of the people who you know today at the meeting. We'd like to have their participation and like to have them enjoy the growth of this university and its student center as well. Thank you all. Linda?
Let on earth, and let it begin with me. Let there be peace on earth, the peace that was meant to be. With God as our Father, brothers are we. Let me walk with my brother in perfect harmony. Let there be peace on earth. Let this be the moment now. With every step I take, let this be my solemn vow. To take each moment and live